And it's not only about our initial salvation, it's the work that he wants to continue doing in our lives and will do in our lives if we allow him to, or we open him to, open to that. This verse up here, worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness. Okay, so then we have to ask the question, what is holiness? What is so beautiful about holiness? Sometimes our concept of holiness, honestly, isn't something, that's something more scary than beautiful. But this says beautiful. This is something that is attractive. This is something that is glorious. And I can't think of anything that would embody holiness more than Christ himself and the life of Christ. I don't think Christ ever did anything or said anything that wasn't holy. So we follow him in all his ways, and we will be able to worship the Lord in that beauty, and we'll be able to see it. Sometimes we need to ask ourselves questions like that. What is holiness? What does it mean that it's beautiful to God? Murray asked me to share a little bit about the you're planning to take up an offering at some point for the school, and I think you know basically what's going on with the school there. We're planning a huge expansion for us. It's a huge expansion for the school in Carmelita. We just signed papers last week, I think. Finally got the papers signed for the lot. It's just under $40,000 US dollars for the lot and part of a building on it. I think the whole project is probably going to run around 100. Maybe a little bit more, give or take a little bit, depending on how far we go with it. So it's going to be a great blessing. This year, we were really hoping during the summer to have been able to move forward. And right now, there's several classrooms or several portable buildings used for classrooms right in the mission property. And it's really crowded with the mission personnel there raising a family. And it really is too crowded. So we were hoping to have them out of there by this school year, but it's not possible yet. Now that the papers are signed, we can begin work, we can build a fence, we can move those buildings over, those portable buildings over into that lot, and begin having, at least clearing out the mission property, and we hope to do that sometime during this school year. But as far as actually working on the existing building that's there, I don't know when we'll do it. I suppose it will depend some on how when the funding becomes available. But we hope to have that certainly before next school year, but I don't know if we'll get much done during this year. Another thing that I'm just really grateful for is the privilege of having Chelsea and Benita with us down there. I know that partly the blessing that they have been to us, or that they are to us, is a lot from what they have received here. So again, thank you. Thank you to the community here. Thank you to the church here for blessing us in that way. I was just looking at a song here this morning, and in the church hymnal, number 343, People of the Living God. We went through the book of Ruth. We're not quite done, but just about in Belize in San Antonio. And I was just inspired and wanted to sing this song this morning. See if I get the right pitch here. I'm not used to doing this on my phone.
People of the living God, lonely I
story of Ruth is certainly a story of grace. You know, as far as I'm able to determine, Elkanah, that's not it, his name slipped me, Naomi and Elimelech, I don't think they were really supposed to go to Moab. I don't think that was what they were supposed to be doing. Moab was the enemy of God's people. Moab had really gotten the people of Israel into a lot of things that they shouldn't have. And they went over there and suffered loss after loss after loss. But they came back. And to me, it's just a story of what God's grace can do. Look at the beautiful story of Ruth that came out of there in spite of, not because of our wrongdoing, in spite of our wrongdoing. And if there's anyone that's feeling overwhelmed by their own mistakes, sins, sinfulness, whatever you want to call it, remember the grace of God when we turn to Him. And it's about our response to it. It doesn't happen just automatically, but when we turn to Him and just give ourselves to Him, what He can do with that. He can make something so beautiful out of it. I'd like to turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 4. And I'd like to speak about leadership. Leadership has two sides to it, sort of two aspects of it. We often talk about the authority side of it, and that's a very real side of it, and whether we like to talk about that or not often depends on which side of it we're on. Whether we like to think about it or not sometimes depends on which side of it we're on. But there's another aspect of leadership. It has to do with responsibility, and that's actually what I'd like to think about this morning. And I'm struggling with some doubts here. Is this really the right thing to talk about now? I had no intention of talking about this when I began to prepare for today. And just to be really honest, I'm still in doubt, but it just seems like this was what we came back to. And I've learned that often when there's something like this, it's me that needs it more than anything else. And so if you have to hear this, just for my sake, I am sorry about that, but it seems like this is where the direction the Lord is leading here for me. And I know I need this, and I certainly would not in any way want to imply, and I have to give a disclaimer right at the beginning, that some of the things I'm going to say, I know that I am falling short of. So I'd like to look at 1 Corinthians 4, verse 2, and one more thing I want to say is that There are not. I'm basing this on what I believe to be the Bible and Bible principles, but there's not a lot of explicit references that I'm going to refer to this morning. I'd like to start off with this verse in 1 Corinthians where it says, "Moreover, it is required as stewards that a man be found faithful," and that isn't even that's not the word leadership is not even in that, but. Let's think about stewards a little bit. A steward is someone who has been given responsibility to care for something that does not belong to him. And so one of the fundamental principle of stewardship is that the steward is required to care for it in the same way that the owner would. And those things that the owner would want them cared for. A steward is not an owner, and so he really isn't allowed to do things just as he would want to do. He always has to take into consideration the will of the owner. What would the owner want done here, and do it that way? And so I think we could, without doing any injustice to the Bible or its principles, change that word to leader. And let's just read it that way. Moreover, it is required in leaders that a man be found faithful. And so a steward can be responsible for material things, as often we think of it in that way. And a leader is responsible for people. And he has a responsibility to care for people and to is responsible for things that have to do with the welfare, contribute to the welfare of the people that he's responsible to. Four. The two aspects of leadership. The New Testament talks a lot about the authority aspect of it, and that leaders are to be obeyed and respected, and the lawlessness that we see in the world today, and sometimes even in the church, is directly opposed to the will of God. That's just directly opposed to God's will, to be anti-authority and anti... That's not... we can't really expect the blessing of God with that attitude, and we can't escape the accountability. We will give account to God for those things. But the other side of leadership, the leadership coin, is responsibility. And to those who are... who we're responsible for, and that's the side we want to look at this morning. And I want it to be clear, too, that this is not about church leaders specifically at all. It's about leaders in our homes, no matter where we are, school, business, home, church. These leadership principles apply. They're principles that I believe are God's principles, not any person or any organization that just came up with these. And if there's anything, and I'm very, very, I don't want to say things that don't have a solid basis. And so if you believe that there is something that is off base, I welcome your correction. I want it to be that way. In every human organization, leadership is important. The success of any organization has a lot to do with how well the leadership fulfills its role. And that can be school, church, home, business, whatever it is. And obviously it includes even government. And that's not to say that every failure of an organization has to do with failed leadership. It isn't. But it does to say in general that how the success of any group has a lot to do with how well leadership carries out its responsibility. Now, all of us are followers, no matter who we are, all the way from, I don't know if the president of North Korea thinks he's a follower, he's following anybody. I don't know if the president of our country thinks he's following anybody, or the prime minister of Belize thinks he's following anybody. But the reality is everybody is influenced and is following somebody. It's also true that most people in some way... Not everyone, I wouldn't say every single person, but most people at some point in some way also are leaders. And that's what we want to look at this morning. This isn't just for, again, it's not just for heads of organizations. This is for all of us to think about these leadership principles when we have people we're responsible for. How do we think about them, and how do we think about that responsibility? So... you know, there's a certain type of leadership that's about personality, and you'll see it anytime a group of people get together, anytime a group of people get together, pretty soon somebody pops out that's kind of the leader. And sometimes we say a ringleader, and usually when we say ringleader, we're talking about heading a direction that we don't like to see so much. But that's just the way it is. But that's the kind of leadership that's just kind of a personality thing. That's not what we're talking about this morning. We're talking about something a little bit more formal than that. We're talking about a leadership that a person has the responsibility. And so if you're a father, you're certainly a leader. You have that responsibility. If you're a mother, you're certainly a leader. If you're a school teacher or a Sunday school teacher or a superintendent, you have those responsibilities. And so as a leader, it's very, very important to, and here's where I find myself just really weak in a lot of ways, but it's very, very important for us to have a very clear vision of the organization that we are supposed to be leading. If it's our home, I don't know if you've ever sat down and thought, and I really... have not done this as much as I should. Sit down. What is the vision that God has for my home? What are the goals I should have? We have an idea. We want to live in a godly way. We want to raise our family, but it's often good for us to think about those things and think specifically what we will do, and then make decisions that are in alignment with those things. And maybe not so much for our homes as it would be for our schools. And for our businesses, do we sit down and think what our vision and our goal is? And even for our churches, sit down and talk about it. What really is our vision? Where do we want to go? And it's good. Maybe it'd be good to write it down. And then when people come into these organizations, it's like our church or our school, we share that with them. Now, we're really good at writing down the rules, and that's an important part of any organization too, the rules. But I'm thinking of something beyond that. I'm thinking of vision. I'm thinking of goals, what we want to do, not only what we don't want to do, but what we want to do. And then when somebody comes into that, they have a clear idea of where we want to go. And when people start going astray from that, then we can challenge them with this thing. Not simply that you're breaking the rules, but look, we have a vision here. You agreed when you came in here. This is our vision. Now it seems like you don't have that vision anymore. You're going somewhere else. We can help you. That works well in other areas. Maybe it would work well in our spiritual organizations as well. But it's important. The point here is just that it's important for leaders to have a clear vision and a clear of the goals of that, and to be aligned with them. If he's not aligned with them, then he really can't do the best job he should be doing for that. If an organization is worthy of existence, it just seems to me it's worthwhile spending some time defining what the purpose and vision and goals are. The Bible talks about different kinds. There are different kinds of leaders. There are good leaders, there are bad leaders, and there are mediocre leaders, kind of neither here nor there. And the Bible gives examples of all of those. And we could think of, if you want to study an example of a bad leader, Saul is classic. And Saul, it's really a tragedy, because I think it was mainly his concept of leadership. He started off a godly man. He was a responsible man. You can't really find, and he was humble. He appeared to be. But I think he had a wrong concept of leadership, like some people do. Like they say, I don't want this job. I didn't ask for this job. I was put here. But now that I'm here, you better listen. You better obey me. And that's a wrong concept. That's not the servant concept that God wants us to have. But it's a wrong concept. It's a twisted concept. It's a worldly concept. And it seems to me that's what happened to Saul. But if you want to look at the example of a tremendous leader, who was a leader long before he was given any position of leadership, look at Joseph, where his life was about serving. And there's many examples there. We could actually, where these messages came together for me was because I just felt like these are all things I've said before back in San Antonio, and I actually had this, what we're talking about this morning is kind of three different messages smashed together, so if they don't make any sense to you, I apologize, but that's what's happening here. But here's a few characteristics of good leaders. Good leaders know what their responsibilities are and carry them out. And they have to be defined. If we're going to do a good job of carrying something, fulfilling our responsibilities, they have to be defined. We have to know what they are. And when we know what they are, we can focus on them and carry them out. But if we don't have any idea what they are, it's hard to carry them out. Good leaders have to know how to do the most important things. There will always be more than we can do. There will always be more than we're actually able to do. It's always that way. So part of learning to be a good leader is to learn to prioritize and know what is the most important. And don't wait till things become urgent. Work on important things before they become urgent things. Good leaders are at the front when there's work to be done, and at the back when recognition is given. They're willing to take more than their share of the blame and less than their share of the credit. Those are things that we've heard often, but I think they're very true. I wanted to repeat them. Good leaders are more concerned about the welfare of those they serve than for their own welfare. And that means that they're more concerned about the welfare of their people than they are about their own reputation. Good leaders communicate with the people they lead, and that means they listen as well as speak. Communication is only at the most half speaking, the rest is listening. Good leaders take counsel from those they lead. Good leaders take responsibility for what happens even when it wasn't their fault. And bad leaders are the opposite. They're willing to let somebody else take the blame, take the fall. Bad leaders obsess with how they appear to others. Bad leaders make sure people know they're in charge. And bad leaders take personal advantage of their position. Maybe it's to promote a personal agenda or promote personal opinion or we see a lot of times maybe some in business you see leaders that take financial advantage of their position. And those are some characteristics of different kinds of leaders. And the Bible talks about these different ones. But you have to remember that real leadership is not about position or title. It's about influence. And a lot of times we can experience that where we're given a position, this is our job and we're given that, but there's very little real influence there because it's nothing more than a position, and people are maybe like it or they don't like it, but we need to grow past that where we really are effective. But there's different levels of that. All right, let's look at some of the characteristics of good leader. Character traits, not characteristics, but character traits. One of those character traits has to be strength. Strength to take an unpopular position. Strength to stand at a place where not many people are willing to stand with you. And that becomes necessary sometimes. Hopefully not often, but sometimes. And for the Apostle Paul, it became necessary in his dealings with the Gentiles. He took a position that was fairly contrary to the rest of the group, but he knew it was right, and he understood that. But he did more than that. He didn't just simply stand alone and say, this is where I am, and this is where I am, and this is where I am. He was willing to get everybody together and talk about it, and they came across. They began to understand why he took that position. So that's something we can learn from that. So strength to take an unpopular position. Strength to carry on in spite of rejection and criticism. And that's another thing that is difficult sometimes for people that say, I didn't want this position to begin with. I didn't want to teach Sunday school, and now they're telling me I'm a bad teacher, it's hard to carry on when you're criticized for something you didn't want in the first place. That's not easy. But God calls us to be faithful and strong and continue on in spite of rejection and criticism. So strength, character, a good leader needs to be strong. He also needs to be humble. He needs to have the ability to admit failure and receive correction. It's powerful when a leader can say, I was wrong, please forgive me, I failed. Not, I was wrong because, or I was, wouldn't, whatever. Just simply apologize and ask for forgiveness. That's pretty powerful. It's powerful when a leader can listen to a critic until he's finished before responding with a defense. And sometimes it's even more powerful to simply thank them for sharing their concern and not respond. Sometimes our greatest critics end up being our greatest helpers because they give us a perspective of ourselves that we can't get by ourselves, we can't see. And it might not be correct completely, but it has a little bit of truth to it. And it helps us understand how they see it. Maybe it's, you know, at least we have that understanding. When we allow someone to to finish and say what they've say everything they have to say, we have a platform then to begin to give our perspective. We've heard theirs. We've listened. We've paid attention. Then we have a platform to give ours. However, maybe even then, it's better not to immediately. I have this personally experienced where that happened. I've been criticized once or twice, and where that happened, and I would listen to them and then try to give a defense or an explanation, my perspective. And sometimes, no matter how I said it, it felt like a kick in the teeth to them. And it seemed to me sometimes that it's just better not to say anything. Just leave it at that. Thanks for your concern. Thank you for sharing. And at some point later, have that meeting that you need to have. But when a person comes with something real on their hearts, and maybe wrong, but it's real. It's real to them. And we defend ourselves or even give our explanation. Sometimes we have to be careful because it just feels like a rebuttal. And it feels like they've not made any progress. We didn't really listen. That's what it seems like to them. So we have to be sensitive to that. Many times it's just better to stop right there and not say a whole lot more. At the same time, a critical spirit is deadly. And it needs to be recognized and needs to be dealt with, but it's much better if it could be dealt with by the group than by any particular individual. Sometimes we set our leaders up, and I think maybe this is true in church as much as anywhere else. I think so. But it can be true in other ways too. Sometimes I think we set our leaders up to fail by holding them up too highly and refusing to acknowledge that they're just like us, and they make mistakes, and they will make mistakes. We really hardly like to acknowledge that. We hold them up too highly, put them on a pedestal, and then when they do fail, and it's obvious, we won't forgive them. They let us down. We didn't expect this of them. But at the same time, we have to take some responsibility. We kind of made them vulnerable. But our leaders are people, no matter who they are, they're people. And if they're going to live successfully, when I say successfully, I mean in the way that God intended, they're going to have to do it in the same way that you do, with lots of humility, lots of prayer, lots of sometimes wrong turns. We just don't know everything. And then when that happens, we need to be willing to ask for forgiveness, but we also need forgiveness. We all know that. A leader, along with that humility, is the ability to esteem others, like Jesus said, or Paul said, not Jesus, esteem others better than ourselves. Now, imagine that. Imagine the effect of that attitude as someone who is responsible to give correction. And if you go to give correction with that attitude of just that, esteeming others better than ourselves, it works much better than when we go with the other end of the attitude. Diligence. So a leader needs to be strong, he needs to be humble, he needs to be diligent. It's good to understand, just from the outset, that the work is never done. It's never done. We stop for rest. We stop for refreshment. We stop to get a breather, but it's up and at it again. And some leaders have a difficulty with that, that it's just never over with. We just like to have get this finished, but it's never over. We'll be at it until we... There's always work to be done. And now, as long as that's our responsibility, we have work to do. And part of diligence is staying ahead of things. When we get behind things get out of control. So things can get out of control when we get behind, and then it can be a disaster. And then failure in one area can spread to failure in other areas. So we need to stay ahead of things in the right way. Sometimes another character trait of good leaders has to be wisdom. You know, there are times when we have no wisdom of our own, just absolutely none. We don't know what to do. And this doesn't matter, again, what situation or what you're responsible for, but sometimes we just don't know what to do. And we have to know where to find answers. We have to know where to find solutions. And sometimes it's God, and those solutions all come from God, and sometimes they come through other people, through the advice of other people. But there are times when maybe everybody is stumped, and we just have to wait and see how God reveals those things to us. And we have to be willing to do that. We have to be willing to say, I just don't know what to do about this right now. Let's ask God. And we'll move from there. We need to have a servant heart. One of the character traits of a good leader is a servant heart. Now, Paul says something interesting in one of the books of Timothy, where he says, if a man desire the office of a bishop, he desires a good thing. And I don't know if I understand that. I really am not sure at all that I do. But he doesn't say it's a good thing to desire that. He just says if you desire that, you're desiring a good thing. But I believe that if I would understand it like this, if you have that desire and you understand that you desire to have an opportunity to serve, because that's what it's about, an opportunity to serve. Sometimes we get a different idea of what that's for, the responsibilities are. But maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's what Paul was talking about. Maybe Paul was talking about people that would really know what the... I'm not sure. I'm not going to comment much more because I don't really know what he meant there for sure. But it would be good for anybody to have a desire to serve. You know, this concept of leadership, the concept of leadership came from God's own mind. And it was created for the good of mankind. And this was something that came to me not long ago. Even in the perfection, what could be more perfect than the Trinity? What could be more perfect than God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit? But in that perfection, there is a headship or a type of leadership. There's something there that in that perfection of the Trinity, that there's headship there. And so it's something that God has built right into the creation. Homes and schools and businesses and churches, all and nations, they're blessed when they have leadership that follows the plan of God from the beginning. And in Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verses 16 and 17, it talks about leadership, leaders there. Ecclesiastes 10. He says, blessed art thou, O land, when thy king is the son of nobles, and thy princes eat in due season for strength and not for drunkenness. Oh, wait, I read verse 17 first. Woe to thee, O land, when thy king is a child and thy princes eat in the morning. So what he's saying there is that woe to the nation that has an irresponsible, immature leader that eats or drinks in the morning. He's taking pleasure, is what he's saying. He's having a good time when the work isn't done yet. But then in 17 he says, blessed art thou, O land, when thy king is the son of nobles, and thy princes eat in due season for strength and not for drunkenness. So this concept of leadership is God's concept, and it came from his own mind. However, as with every single good thing, and I think it's correct to say this, that evil, all evil is nothing more than a perversion of something that God has created good. I think so. Because the reason I think so is because God created everything at the beginning. It was all good. And evil came from a perversion of all that, of those things. So in this concept of leadership, even though it came from God, the world has perverted it. And the concept of leadership in the world today is not the same concept as we see portrayed in the scripture. It's different in several ways. One way is in who decides who is qualified to be a candidate for leadership. In the Bible, people were called directly either by God himself or were chosen by other people. But and we look at people like, we don't see any great leaders in the Bible that set themselves up, as far as I know, as far as I can think of. On the other hand, we have people like Moses, called directly by God, Gideon, David, Paul, all those people, they were called directly by God. They were great people. They were great leaders and chosen by God himself. But we also have the seven deacons in the book of Acts who were leaders as well, and they were chosen by the congregation. And Moses chose leaders to help him, and leaders. Paul asked his churches or the bishops of the churches to choose other leaders to help them. And so leaders can be chosen by God himself, or they can be chosen by God's people. That's the biblical pattern, a biblical way of doing it. But in today's world, it works completely different. People push themselves forward. People offer themselves as candidates. If someone wants to be a pastor, they go to seminary. And I don't know that going to seminary is all bad. I'm not really talking about that. But this whole idea of pushing yourself into leadership is not a biblical concept. We don't find it in the Bible. I'm not going to condemn it, but I just don't think you find it in the Bible in that way. And so, obviously, the huge example of that is in politics. Promoting yourself, it seems so anti-Christ. So we have to be careful the concepts that we get. We don't want to take the world's concept of leadership and apply it to ourselves or to our churches, because we want to make sure we go to the biblical concepts. There are certain leadership responsibilities that are given by God, and he will hold us accountable. Some leadership responsibilities maybe are optional. Maybe it's all right to say, look, I just can't do this. I just don't feel I'm able to do this, and back away from it. That's possible. However, if you're getting married, you have a responsibility you just can't back away from. You are a man is called to be a leader in that home, and whether he likes it or not, whether he wants it or not, whether he feels capable or not, it's just his. There's just no getting away from it. He is responsible for that. And when responsibility is given by God, and he will hold us accountable. He won't accept excuses. And we don't do anybody any good. We don't help people when we allow them to make excuses for their behavior or whatever. And God doesn't either. God doesn't allow that. He just simply is going to hold us accountable for the responsibilities that he's given us. And we can look at three biblical examples for that. Adam did not choose to eat the fruit. I mean, he was led into that by his wife. God still held him accountable. Moses struck the rock out of sheer frustration with the way the people were acting. And, you know, you can hardly blame him, but he didn't get away with that. Saul did something that really made sense in a lot of ways when he'd saved some of those nice animals from Amalek instead of destroying everything. He didn't get away with it. God held him responsible. God held him accountable. He had a responsibility. He didn't fulfill it, and he was accountable for it. And we won't get away either. God will hold us accountable for our fulfilling our responsibilities. Now, God will not hold leaders accountable for responsible for the way people respond to their leadership. That is beyond their control. But God will hold leaders accountable for the way they fulfill their responsibilities. And that is a relief if you're a leader, to know that if people just refuse to listen to what I'm trying to help them with, that eventually is going to go home with them. But my responsibility is to do this in the way that God wants me to do it. So as we consider ourselves, and maybe as you were thinking about your own responsibilities here this morning, throughout the morning here, we can ask ourselves some questions. How are we fulfilling that role, that responsibility that we have? Are we taking it seriously? You know, sometimes we take things seriously that we shouldn't, like the title or the position. We take that seriously and forget to take the responsibility seriously. God wants us to not pay much attention to the title, not pay much attention to the position, but the responsibility that goes with it, that we take seriously. And we remember that we will give an account to God, not for how things turned out, but for how faithfully we fulfilled our role. Moreover, it is required of leaders that a man be found faithful. Let's kneel for prayer.